When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Sports Illustrated's NBA show, breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix, Rohan Adkady, and Chris Herring.
Welcome back to another episode of the Crossover Podcast. I'm Rohan Adkady, joined today by not one, but two Sports Illustrated senior writers. My good, great, best friend, Chris Mannix, and the New York Times best-selling author, Chris Herring. Guys, as far as the offseason goes, this was a pretty interesting week with some of the news coming out, with Mark Spears of Handscape and ESPN reporting that the Raptors have become the front-runner in the Damian Lillard sweepstakes. And we've talked about Dame a few times this summer. I don't think the Raptors have really come up seriously until now. So let's just dive right into it, because it's still unclear right now what a potential Dame package would be for the Raptors. In my mind, it would have to include Scottie Barnes to beat some of the other offers out there. That might not be the case. But Mannix, I'll just start with you. Do you think it makes sense for the Raptors to make this move? Because they haven't really come up, at least between us, a lot so far this summer.
Yeah. Let's first confirm that these are real discussions that are going on between Toronto and Portland right now. That much I've been told pretty explicitly. I don't really get it from Toronto's perspective. You know, a lot of people look back on the Kawhi Leonard deal and say, this is the Raptors once again taking a big swing. But the circumstances could not be more difficult. When the Raptors made that trade back in, 2018 – they were in a very different position. That was a 48-win team at the time that clearly had plateaued. That was, with DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry as the centerpieces, just didn't have enough to be a championship team. What they gave up for Kawhi was, steep but certainly manageable. It was DeMar DeRozan. It was Jakob Poeltl. It was a protected first-round pick. Pieces that they could live without in exchange for Kawhi Leonard. And, even though there were some bumps early on, the result was what it was. They won a championship, so it made sense. This version of the Raptors team is in an entirely different place. Over the last couple of off seasons, they have been gutted by trades and free agency. They have lost Kyle Lowry. They have lost Fred VanVleet. They are built around young players with Scottie Barnes, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, a little bit on the older side at this point, but still, in his prime as a player. And if I don't know exactly what the offers have been, but you have to imagine that Anunoby's in the deal, both for his talent and his contract. You have to imagine that a blue chip prospect like Grady Dick is in the deal, because you want a blue chip prospect if you're the Portland Trailblazers. You also have to imagine that multiple first round picks are going to be in this deal, because the Blazers, it seems more likely than not, have something to that effect from Miami in an offer. So you're basically saying that, best case scenario, a core of Lillard, Scottie Barnes, and Pascal Siakam is what you're building around. And 3 or 4 years ago, I might have said, 3 or 4 years ago, Barnes was like in high school, but you know what I mean? 3 or 4 years ago, with where Siakam was, where Lillard was, I might have understood that. But right now, does Lillard, Siakam, and Barnes get you to like the second round? I don't know. I mean, I think it's a pretty good team because I think Scottie Barnes is, I'm going to guess he's going to take a step forward this year. It's kind of a rough sophomore year for him, but I'm going to guess he's going to keep improving like we've seen from him in his rookie year. Siakam seems to be past the shooting woes that he had a couple of seasons ago. Best case scenario, you're like a second round team. You know, maybe you can get to a conference finals, and that's next year. The year after that, you know, you have to wonder, will Lillard be the same guy? I just don't get it. I don't see how this trade in any form makes the Raptors a championship contender. I could see how Kawhi did it. The big question with Kawhi was, could they keep him long-term, and were they just rolling the dice on one season? This is over multiple seasons, but I don't see the pathway to a championship given what they'd have to give up to get Damian Lillard.
For sure. Herring, I'll get to you in a second. I'll just hop in, add even more Kawhi context. I mean, essentially what they did in that trade was swap DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard. I mean, Jakob Poeltl was a nice piece. They ended up adding, you know, Mark Gasol to that team later that year. That was a very plug-and-play trade. You mentioned all the other pieces they had around him. That made a ton of sense. That was a team that had kept hitting its head against the ceiling, too. It had made a conference finals already. This is a completely different Raptors team that has taken a step back and, to your point, has entered something of a soft rebuild with Barnes. Herring, here's a question, because as Manic said, this went from, I think, the Raptors can basically trump any offer from these other teams if they include Barnes. But now we're hearing it might be centered around Ananobi instead. Herring, my question for you is, if you're trying to win a title next year, would you rather have OG or Barnes? Because I don't even understand doing this trade and trading away Ananobi and keeping Barnes, who, while I really like, there's a lot of pressure on Scottie Barnes to turn into a player he hasn't quite been yet.
I'm right there with you from that standpoint. I wouldn't want to give up Barnes either, just because, I mean, people that can put up 15-5-4 or 15-6-5 or whatever he had last year or the year before, this guy won Rookie of the Year. It's not someone you're looking to trade away necessarily. Obviously, he's got some flaws in his game and some stuff that he can kind of really build on, but I still think that I would want to move him quicker, especially if, at least under Nick Nurse, they were trying to play him into a point forward role, which you aren't going to need as much right now if you bring Damian Lillard onto this roster. So you need wing defenders in this league. And obviously Siakam is a good defender. You've got other guys on that roster that are lengthy and, you know, and that's kind of the way this team was built. But I would probably sooner be looking to move Barnes than OG if your thought is you're pushing your chips most of the way in, maybe not all the way in if you're keeping Scottie Barnes. But if you're trying to build a championship roster for the next year or two, which is what would make it comparable to the Kawhi thing, the only way in which it would be comparable, I don't see how taking your best two-way player helps achieve that. I would think that you're deciding that you're going for right now in the next couple of years as opposed to the next 10 if you're trading for him. And I would think that if you're doing that, it makes more sense to move Barnes than it does OG.
I'd be really nervous though to deal Scottie Barnes. Like, mm-hmm.
Of course.
His first year, you know, you saw like shades of Scottie Pippen. You saw something in him that could be special. And while he didn't take the kind of steps people hoped he would take in his second year, I still think that's within him. You know, he's still in his very early 20s.
Fair.
I still think he's got that in him. I know what you're saying. Like, if you're in win now mode, maybe OG makes more sense, but man, you know, you trade, you know, a guy like Scottie Barnes, you know, you don't win a championship 2-3 years down the road, you know, he could be an all-star for all we know, because he'll certainly blossom in Portland. That would make me real nervous if I was
Go on the record and say this too, since I didn't add the necessary context. I'm in complete agreement with you that I'm not quite sure where this makes sense for the Raptors. The timeline just doesn't make quite enough sense to me. And not just that, but I don't, again, does it make them favorites? Does it make them the second most likely favorites? Does it make them the third most likely favorites coming out of the East? And I just don't know that it does any of that. And if it doesn't, it prompts the question of why? Why would you do it? It also prompts the question I think a lot of people were wondering of, why would you let Fred VanVleet walk for nothing as opposed to trading him for something and having a little bit more to deal here for a trade like this or for something? You know, I just, there's a lot that I'm not quite understanding. Look, I love the Raptors. I like what they try to do. I like that they swing big. They won a championship off of swinging big. But I just think that the context here is a lot different. They're starting from a place that is a lot thinner and from talent that is not quite what it was at the time that they won that championship. So I'm right there with you that it doesn't quite make sense to me to do this.
Letting guys walk too is like Raptors 101.
Yes.
You know, the number, like the, a lot of teams, when you get a guy in a position where he's in the last year of his contract, you do a deal no matter what the deal is. Like you get something back in return. The Raptors are developing kind of a history or a pattern of, you know, doing the opposite. I mean, Kyle Lowry, it was a sign and trade, but he just walked away. You know, you had Fred VanVleet just walk away. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with Siakam down the line. He's what is extension eligible now, I think, right? And, you know, free agent next year. So, you know, this is kind of what they do. They seem to be prioritizing cap flexibility over any kind of asset return when it comes to these players.
This is also a very tricky situation. You mentioned Siakam. He's an expiring deal. He's on, you know, he's a player option for next year that by most accounts he's not going to accept. Anunoby is on an expiring deal. So let's say you do trade Barnes in this scenario. Are you definitely coming back and re-signing Siakam and OG to long-term deals, potentially pushing yourself into the second apron? Because I think any team acquiring Dame, I think, has to look at it as we have a two-year title window with him. Because I think years 3 and 4, he can still be a very good player, but you know, we've seen him have injuries in his most recent years. He was great individually last year, but he didn't necessarily move the needle for Portland. I think it's fair to say you're getting Dame on maybe a two-year title window, but if you acquire him, I think that's going to require you to re-sign Siakam long-term and Anunoby long-term, guys who have been in trade rumors. I mean, we were talking about Siakam being traded to the Pacers earlier this summer. Now, all of a sudden, they're part of a new championship core. I think that makes it very complicated. And I just want to echo, I think we're all in agreement. Scottie Barnes has flashed a lot of potential and is a very interesting player and can be really good. He was starting to get defended a little differently towards the end of last year because of the lack of jump shot, which I think he needs to clean up. But if you hold on to him, that makes the trade even more confusing for me because I think by the time Barnes is kind of really ready to be a championship centerpiece type player, you're looking at a year or two down the line when Dame is less effective, when Siakam might be less effective. Any team that does a deal like this is going to have depth concerns, but I think Toronto, frankly, is even... I mean, their backup point guard right now, I mean, granted they have Dennis Schroeder, but they got Malachi Flynn. If Gary Trent goes in the deal, they're going to have a huge hole on the wing. Their front court depth has already been kind of an issue for them the last few years. I agree. It doesn't make a lot of sense for me for the Raptors. But I respect Masai Ujiri for, like we said, they like to take big swings. That's the way I would GM personally is like, yeah, let's go get the great player and figure it out from there. But you guys mentioned you don't know where they'd rank in the East. Look, let's have that conversation. Like if they
can we first, Rohan, just this is the other side of this is no matter what happens over the next couple of days and weeks, this is great news for the Portland Trailblazers because Portland, excuse me, Portland suddenly has another option. This is what we've been talking about for weeks. Mm-hmm. Like Portland had nobody else to do business with other than Miami. And that allowed Miami to make whatever offer it made and not plus it up at all. That's why these talks have been dormant for so long, because Miami did not want to be bidding against itself. Now, Portland at least has the perception of a real offer from Toronto. I've seen some of these betting websites set Boston as a team that could be in the mix for Dame Lillard. Not exactly sure how that works without Jaylen Brown, but you know, whatever. You've got some business going on now. You've got some interest around Damian Lillard right now. And that's the best thing Portland can hope for at this point. So it's not just Miami sitting there waiting to see if Portland will just make an offer. I mean, that's kind of been the way it's been up to this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's put a pin in that because I want to ask some stuff about the Heat a little bit later and discuss the way they've handled this. But back to Toronto for a second here. In the event that Toronto got Lillard, I mean, Manix, you said second round. Do you think, would you put them above Philly? Would you put them above Boston? Like, what does the top of the East look like for you guys if Dame were to land in Toronto?
I wouldn't put them above either of those teams. I think Milwaukee right now is the cream of the crop still, at least in the regular season. And I think Boston and Philly are battling out once again for the second and third seeds. I think the Lillard-led Raptors have the potential to be explosive, but I think there are some defensive issues there. It's going to take some time for them to come together, especially since we're talking about a deal that at the earliest could conceivably be done days before the start of training camp. I think they're a good team, but I think it's more likely they're competing for a spot on the higher end of the play-in, namely 7 or 8, than they are competing for 1, 2, or 3. I just think it's very challenging to see that team, as it might be currently constituted, contending for anything right now.
I mean, I think they'd be in like a battle with Cleveland. Like, I think everyone's forgotten about how good Cleveland was last year during the regular season. I think that would probably be a better team than what the Raptors put together. Am I off base? Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be real with you. As we were sitting here talking about this, I sat and kind of just sketched out the teams that I think you have to at least consider would be better, certainly out of the gate, but then maybe even, by the end of the season, a year from now. You're certainly starting with Boston, Milwaukee. Cleveland was the third team I listed, just as far as this is a team that should still get better. And I think, strengthened a little bit during the course of the offseason. I think addressed a little bit of what was hindering them last year. But then right behind those three, Philly, I think you have to put there, even with the Harden questions looming. I'm not going to punt on the Knicks necessarily. That's the team that beat Cleveland. And, while I don't
nice
think
adjustments,
they did
all-
Yeah, I don't think they did a whole lot this offseason, but they added a little bit of depth, and they've got a coach that is somewhat proven. And, that's another factor that we haven't mentioned here is that the Raptors had a coach that they won a championship with, and now they're replacing him with someone that hasn't coached, as a head coach in the NBA. And it's not to say, Nick Nurse had not been a head coach in the NBA either, so it's not to knock him, but it's just a question. The other team that I'll put there for now, I don't love what their offseason has looked like, particularly without Damian Lillard joining the roster, is Miami. When we talk about disparities between how much experience one coach has versus another, Miami still has a collection of guys that have shown that they can overperform and also through coaching can kind of get there to the biggest stage. So right there, we're talking about six teams that I think at least arguably have a good, you could make a good argument that they would be better than Toronto. And I just think when you have to debate that many teams and the high end of what they can do, I do agree with Chris that I think defensively Toronto would have questions, particularly if they're trading away OG, particularly if they're trading Gary Trent in this deal on the wings in particular. I just would really be concerned about them. So I think they're a little bit too far away for this to make sense. I mean, if it was something where they were maybe getting a little bit more talent along with Dame and trading more stuff out to do it, to kind of address some of that stuff, or maybe a three-team deal or something like that to get more talent to come in alongside him, then maybe I could believe in a little bit more. But I think they're a little bit too far away for it to be sensible right now. Unless your hope is to roll the dice with Dame and then retool it potentially if you let Siakam walk or you're trying to assign a trade with them. But I just think that that's too many moving parts at that point. I think that you would want to have something that you can really lean on for at least the next couple of years, and this just doesn't sound like that to me.
Also, real quick from Portland's perspective, I agree. It's good that they have other teams in the mix, but let's say Portland gets Ananobi in this deal. Does that make sense for Portland? Ananobi's expiring. Like, he's due a big contract. I think he is the kind of player that, we've seen Mikal Bridges, for example, take a little bit of a leap in Brooklyn. I don't know if we can expect that from Ananobi. At the same time, we saw Brooklyn was incredibly limited offensively when it came to playoff time because they didn't have a true shot creator. Like, is Ananobi the right long-term bet for Portland when they've already given out big money to Jeremy Grant?
Well, I think the Grant side of it, they need to get off that as soon as possible. Like, Damian Lillard is priority number one. Moving Jeremy Grant is priority number two. Like, Jeremy Grant is, I mean, what is he, 30-something at this point? Just not a player that fits with the rebuilding model the Blazers are headed toward. So if you move Jeremy Grant at some point, at least if you're prioritizing moving Jeremy Grant, yeah, Anunoby makes sense. He's still young enough that he fits into the long-term timeline of Anthony Simons, of Shaedon Sharpe, of Scoot Henderson. I wouldn't blink at paying him, you know, big money, because I think he's already an excellent two-way player who's only going to get better in the years to come, maybe even more so with an enhanced role. I think it's more about, you know, getting off of Grant, because I think their skill sets are somewhat redundant, and allowing Anunoby to kind of fill that role.
Got it. Yeah, I don't disagree. I just think that's it would be kind of a moving Grant is the key aspect there, because that's a lot of money to commit to a roster next year that would still be in a rebuilding phase around Scoot. You'd have Simons is on a bigger contract. You'd have Anunoby. You'd have Grant theoretically. You still have Nurkic. Nurkic has not really been mentioned as part of the Raptors discussions. He's a guy that they maybe were looking to move off of. It would be a oddly expensive team for where Portland is right now. Let's talk about the Heat a little bit, because as Mannix mentioned earlier, they were kind of the only team involved. Mannix and I talked about this a month ago now, maybe, where I think we both are like, the Heat kind of got to get off their ass a little bit here and can't act like the team with all the leverage. They can't act like the team that is less desperate for Damian Lillard, especially given how little movement they've had offseason. If the Heat don't acquire Damian Lillard, how much blame do they deserve for not kind of stepping up their offer? Or is it just, do you guys think Portland never really liked what they had to give up in the first place?
I think both can be true. It's very clear Portland never liked what Miami was offering. At the same time, Miami's had months to plus up that offer and beef up that offer, and they haven't done it. All I've seen is, you know, Heat fans and some select members of, excuse me, Heat media, you know, kind of just, you know, imploring the Trailblazers to just make a deal.
It's like, true. Just like, so much coping. It's so like, much Portland, coping going
why,
on. It's
why
embarrassing.
Don't you,
it's embarrassing.
Portland, why don't you make a deal here? So I think there's blame on both sides. And I understand why with Miami. Like, you know, Miami is still, you know, like everybody else, Miami's curious to see what happens with Giannis. Now, if Giannis decides to request a trade at some point during the year or even next season, Miami wants to have assets to make a run at him. But if you're the Heat and Jimmy Butler's in his mid-30s and Bam Adebayo's in his prime, I don't know if you have the luxury of waiting and hoping that Giannis becomes available. And if he does, you have the assets to go and get him. I think you've got to operate.
They'd have to trade Bam from Giannis. Like, there's no other way they're getting Giannis.
More or less. I mean, and I think other teams out there are going to have more appealing offers. I mean, the Knicks have been sitting there for, you know, over a year now saying, like, we're not doing anything until we figure out what's going on with Giannis. Like, all their assets are being kept in the pursuit of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Miami, I just don't think they're in the same position. That's a team that went to the finals. That's a team with a superstar at the back end of his prime. Like, you've got to operate as if you have a very short window. So if Damian Lillard winds up going elsewhere, or winds up staying in Portland, and Miami winds up blowing the season, a season where, you know, I don't know how many more seasons like Jimmy Butler had last year that he's going to have moving forward. That's kind of on them to me. I think they've, if they really want Damian Lillard, and they think Lillard can be a difference maker, they've got to go get him, because look at their depth chart right now. I mean, you've got what, like, is Hero going to start at point? I had it pulled up a second ago. You got Hero, I guess he's the starting point guard for this team right now. Josh Richardson, Jimmy Butler, Kevin Love, Bam Adebayo. I mean, no disrespect to Richardson and Kevin Love, but you're talking about starting two guys on minimum contracts. Like, that's
Love was out of the Cavs rotation last year.
I mean, you know, you get Duncan Robinson off the bench. Caleb Martin is still there. Haywood Highsmith was okay, but you know, on paper, that's a play-in team at best. And I think there are some teams in the East that can, if their young players perform, they're going to be more competitive than people think. So, you know, I don't know. Is Miami willing to risk this being a lost year? And if they are, like, how many more years, how many more lost years can Jimmy Butler take?
Yeah, to be honest, I thought last year was going to be a bit of a lost year for the Heat. With, again, last year they had a similar offseason. They didn't do much.
It looked like
that. And they were like 2 minutes away from it being a lost year when they were trailing late in the fourth quarter against Chicago in the second play-in game. And, you know, the Heat have been in this weird position where it's like, do we believe, did we lose guys from an eighth seed or did we lose guys from a finals team this offseason? You know what I mean? In terms of Gabe Vincent and Max Strus leaving, you could either say, well, our team wasn't very good during the regular season, or you could say, wait a second, those guys started every game on the way to the finals. I don't like the strategy. I've said from the start, I don't like the strategy. I think the idea that, you know, Hero and a couple first round picks is going to get it done is absurd. I think they overvalue Hero. I think people in Miami overvalue Hero, who is not a bad player, but he is a 20 point per game scorer in a time where it's never been easier to score 20 points in NBA history. More people are doing it than ever. The two-way skills are just more valued when it comes to playoff time. And I think they maybe, if they had done a trade that was centered around, let's say, Lowry's expiring deal, Jovic, Hawkes, the two first-round picks they own, and whatever picks they could get for Hero, I think something like that was always going to be their best bet. And it just sounds like they haven't been willing to do that. And I think that they do deserve a level of blame for it. If Portland doesn't like their assets, that's on Miami to go out there and get the assets required, especially when you have a guy saying, I only want to play in Miami. You know, think about it. Right. They missed out on Bradley Beal. They couldn't sign Kevin Durant as a free agent. Then they couldn't trade for him. Now you finally have a guy saying, I want to go only to your team. That's the situation where you have to get it done. If you think about like Giannis and Embiid, for example, even if they say only Miami, at this point, it's been proven that that's not enough to get a player to the Heat. So I don't know in what world the Heat think they'd have enough to win a bidding war for guys who are – their value is going to be even higher than Lillard. I mean, Giannis'
By the way, Rowan, there are, to bring it back to Lillard for a second, like there are two GMs I can think of that don't care if Lillard doesn't want to be there. One is Danny Ainge. And the other would be Masai Ujiri.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if you go back to 2018, like there was reporting around the time of the Kawhi Leonard trade, like Kawhi Leonard has no interest in being a Toronto mm-hmm. Raptor. Like Masai Ujiri does not care. Like you have a contract and you know what? You might like Toronto. You could learn to like it. It's very cosmopolitan, yeah. Very international. You might learn to, it might grow mm-hmm. on you. Either way, we don't care. You're going to play for us. You're going to get paid. So I think that's interesting. That's what makes me believe there's fire to this Raptor stuff too, because Masai's one of those GM/presidents that would be willing to do this without the approval of Damian Lillard.
I believe it was Stephen A. Smith who said Toronto is special. I'll just let people Google that clip for themselves, see what he was talking about. Herring, what do you think about how the Heat have handled the situation? Because I think it's like, I wanted to go far to say hubris. I kind of understand the negotiating stance, like we're going to wait for another team to get involved. No, but now another team is involved. Right. But now another team is involved, and they right. have to, you know, I don't know if they're going to step it up still.
They were taking a spoiled approach toward this, I think, that, you know, I get it. Like they want to be careful with assets, particularly because they are trying to win right now with someone like Lillard, but they also would love to kind of keep a wandering eye for Giannis or Embiid or whoever else is going to come down the pipeline. Maybe not necessarily Embiid since they have Bam, but they want to keep an eye open toward whatever else might happen. That's a really difficult thing to do. And I think Chris hit the nail on the head. I've agreed with him more on this pod than anyone I can remember just from the standpoint of you've already got two guys that you're trying to build around. Mm-hmm. One of whom is kind of, I'll be honest with you, I'm surprised he's held up as well physically as he has already in Jimmy. I thought that the breakdown would have happened sooner than it will or sooner than it is from that standpoint anyway. So you've already kind of won that from that standpoint. You've made it to – they were, what, one shot away from making it to three finals in four seasons or whatever it's been? Like, you've already gotten as far as I imagine you're going to go if you don't make another move here. And you've got a player now saying, this is the only place I want to go. So I understand the idea of not wanting to give up more assets than you need to. I also can understand Portland looking at Tyler Hero like that Firefest sandwich that they were trying to give out. They don't want it. That's not what they want. That's not what any team would want when they're not giving away Damian Lillard, but trading him away. That's not going to satisfy the fan base. It's not going to help you win. They want something different than that. It's been on Miami for months now to go find something that would meet what Portland wants. And, you know, we've all been saying for a while now that if other teams want to get seriously involved here and throw caution to the wind from the standpoint that someone like Lillard might not want to go there, there are other teams on that part of the country, just on the East Coast, that could certainly offer better deals. There are teams that that made it pretty much just as far as Miami did that could essentially offer that. Whether it was Boston that we've talked about, Philly certainly could. Now, whether they want to part ways with their young players to do that is a different question. But, you know, that's what, again, as Chris said, what makes Masai so interesting. Again, I don't think it makes sense for Toronto to do. There's too many question marks for me, but the Heat will deserve a ton of blame if they don't get him, because I think you're just playing with fire at this point to not go get a player that so clearly wants to be there when you're that close. And also, not to mention, you've lost a lot of talent this offseason. And so if you're not replenishing that through a star, then what are you doing? And all the times where it looked like you were about to take a step back and you kind of were really fortunate not to, because Spo is Spo and because your players are just dogs, you can only play that card so many times. Also, as we talk about how much longer Jimmy Butler has, how much longer does Pat Riley have to really, he wants to win one more. He wants to make a splash. Then do it. I don't know how else to put it here.
I just, you know, as you guys know, I'm from South Florida. I don't know if that's ever come up before on this podcast, but now everyone knows it. You know, I've seen the chatter. I've been working on some preview stories, so I've talked to a lot of people, and just the way, in some ways, this finals run has maybe allowed the Heat to operate differently than they should, because I think there's some like prevailing notion down here. It's like, are you really going to doubt this team? Are you really going to doubt this team again? You know, they just made the finals. Are you really going to doubt that they can do it again? They made it as an eighth seed, you know? And I just think that line of thinking is incredibly short-sighted. And they are putting, you know, I think Pat Riley, if you gave him a huge dose of truth serum, I like to think deep down he would say they've overachieved Jimmy Butler. I think what he'd say publicly is these are the expectations you have when you acquire a star. But nobody had the Heat, I think, as successful as they've been over the last 4 years since they acquired Jimmy Butler. And I think they've overachieved. And I just don't think the strategy can be, let's put pressure on Jimmy to play out of his mind for 2 months every year, which he's been able to do a couple of times now, to his credit. And, you know, obviously, congratulations to him for that. But I just don't think that can be the strategy, is just get us into the playoffs and then we'll see what happens in any given series because we have Jimmy and Spo.
They made the finals, but they were life and death in the play-in.
Exactly.
They're a couple of bad possessions away from losing to Atlanta.
They're like an Alex Caruso missed three from being knocked out by Chicago in that game.
Yeah.
Chicago was up three. Caruso took a big shot open on the wing. Like, I agree. Like, they're living on a razor's edge. The margins are very thin. And beyond that, it's not just making the finals. If you actually want to win, you know that you need more. If you actually want to win. So I think I don't think it's a good strategy. And maybe it is just Portland wants absolutely nothing to do with, you know, guys like Jovic and Hawkes or whatever the case may be. But the Heat, I think, for a long time should have been trying much harder to flip Tyra Hero into things that Portland would want. Instead, they're here now. Let's move away from Dame for a second. Because media day, training camp, all that stuff finally coming up in the next week. Guys, we're only a few days out from October. Herring, I'll go to you first on this one. Not to put you quite on the spot, but as training camp media day approaches, is there a storyline? Is there a thing that you're most interested in that maybe we haven't discussed much? Obviously, there are other teams and players in the world outside of Damian Lillard. What are you excited to maybe hear about, see some quotes about, talk about as training camp opens next week?
Bruh, like, put James Harden on that podium now. Like, please. Please. Like, popcorn ready. Like, because I just want to hear him say, like, I repeat, I will not play for a team that is led by that man, or whatever he said. Is it related to Daryl Morey? I mean, this is a team that, again, as we've talked about on this pod, a number of times, as Mannix has written a few times. This is a team that could win. You know, like, it's conceivable that they could win. If you just took this roster, all context out the window, just of do they have enough talent on this team to make something happen? We just watched Miami make it to the finals as an 8 seed. So absolutely Philly could do that. They have an MVP. Granted, you know, no one would say he's the best player in the world. but they have an MVP, a reigning MVP on that roster. They have an up-and-coming star who, if he were an all-star this year, it would not be shocking by any means. They've got a player that, yes, overpaid, but still a very good, I think most people would say, like, a good fourth option on this team. And by the way, they've got James Harden, who, again, context aside, if you just push that aside for a moment, has shown, even in series where he's been just, you know, obliterated as far as public perception and everything else, that he's gone out and scored 40 multiple times. So they've got enough talent here. They have a new coach who, again, has won a championship. They're capable. I just think that it's, we're looking at the outside factors and the craziness of what's going on there and saying that this looks nuts. So we're not expecting anything, but they could still win 50 games. I don't think it would be surprising if they did that, but who knows how James Harden will show up? Who knows what sort of effort he'll give? There's all the incentive in the world for him to give his best because it's a contract year for him. But who knows how this devolves or evolves or progresses or regresses? That's why I'm going to have my popcorn ready as media day as on the horizon, because I it could go either way. And I'm very curious to see where it goes, how it's discussed, and on some level, how it's going to manifest for the next few months.
No, as you know, as much of a beating as Harden has taken, to your point, Chris, he averaged 20 and 10 last year. He led the NBA in assists. He shot 38% from three. Like, this is a still all-star level player with a backcourt mate that could be an all-star player. I hear nothing but good things out of the workouts for Tyrese Maxey this offseason. You got Joel Embiid, who's just hitting 30, so he's in his prime. Contract year Tobias Harris, Pat Bev coming off the bench with some energy. They've got some depth there. I mean, like, I still think they're jockeying for second and third with Boston, but you're not going to convince me that team can't win. Like, that's a team that if they get through the East, they can win a championship. Like, they've got enough to beat Denver in a finals, the Clippers, the Suns, the Lakers, whoever comes out of the Western Conference. They've got enough. And, you know, so I'm with you. I want to see Harden on the podium to see what he says, to see if he's there, to see if he shows, all that stuff. Can I give mine now, Ro, on my storyline?
Please.
Can I become the first Orlando Magic stan of this podcast?
Ooh, I don't know that you'd be the first.
But we haven't talked about it on the pod like that. I want to hear what you're saying
now. Magic in a long time. All right, but
I was in Orlando this past weekend for some boxing stuff. So I consumed a lot of Magic content while I was down there.
Like literal Magic or Orlando Magic basketball?
I mean, I went to Magic Kingdom.
There we go. So. Okay.
But wow, like Orlando Magic. Wow. It was for work. It was for work. The more I read about Orlando and study Orlando, and I was just consuming game notes too while I was down there. I kind of have a feeling they're going to have a sneaky good year. Like, somebody asked me about this for a mailbag question that I posted on Tuesday on SI.com, but like, who could be the Sacramento Kings of this year? The team that comes out of nowhere and just does things that nobody expects. And Orlando kind of fits that mold. Like, they're not Sacramento because Sacramento had some very proven commodities there. De'Aaron Fox was a proven commodity. Domantas Sabonis, proven commodity. You don't really have many, if any, proven commodities in Orlando. What you do have is some ridiculous young talent. Like Paolo Banchero, terrifying offensive potential. Franz Wagner, really good player. I was looking at some of the numbers. Franz Wagner ranked the top 10 in fourth quarter scoring last year. Markelle Fultz, never going to be the number one pick, but second half of the season, he averaged like 16-5 or 16-6.
Solid.
Those are pretty good numbers. You've got two first round picks that they're going to be working into the rotation, Anthony Black and Jet Howard. You've got some ex-lottery/high first-round picks, in Cole Anthony and Jalen Suggs. There's a lot of young talent on this roster.
I still think can be good,
Look, this was a team that started 5-20 last year. They played about 500 basketball from December on. If they're healthy, throw Gary Harrison in that mix as well as a good 3-and-D player. If they're healthy, could they be a 500 team this year or better? You have to think organic improvements alone could push them above 500. The, you know, beyond the top three or four in the Eastern Conference, nobody else is a sure thing in the back half of it. I think I keep my eye on Orlando this year. I think Orlando, with Jamal Mosley, who I think is a very, very good head coach, you've got the pieces there where if you see organic growth and good health, you could have a team that's competing for a 4-5 spot in the Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. I really believe that's a team that could surprise a lot of people.
I love this idea. I love this pick. even though for years I've wanted to see Gary Harris play for a contender again, I really like this Magic team. There were like games, like you mentioned, they started off slow, but like I remember watching the Magic play the Warriors early last season, and like they needed buckets in the last 2 minutes of the game, and they were already going to Boncaro, like against Draymond Green. Like, that was awesome, and like he didn't win that matchup certainly every time, but the scoring potential is there. I think they're going to be a really interesting team. I'm interested to see what happened with Jalen Suggs. I do think he's become kind of a forgotten guy here with how good Wagner and Boncaro have been. But, you know, Suggs came in with the same amount of hype as his contemporaries in his draft class. So,
look at some of the signs there too, right? Like, last year, in games decided by 5 points or less, they were 9-13. I told you, I was just gobbling game note stats when I was down there. When they defend, like, they're a middle-of-the-pack defensive team, which is not bad for a team that young. They're the fourth youngest team in the NBA. Middle-of-the-pack defensive team. In games they actually defended by holding opponents under 100 points, they're 8-0. So if they continue to on that track where they're improving defensively, which I think they can they get in the top 10? Might be a stretch, but you know, if they can get 11th, 12th in defensive efficiency, I don't know. I think like they were 26th in offensive efficiency. They're going to get better in that that aspect with growth and health. I just think they're going to be surprising. They're going to play. They're going to have some more connectivity. They're going to play well. I saw some people out there suggesting Orlando should be a Damian Lillard trade target, or the Magic should trade for Damian Lillard. Like, it's not like I wouldn't do it. Because I think you get gouged for assets. But, like, you know, point guard, with respect to Fultz, is probably their greatest weakness at the moment. Mm-hmm. Plug Damian Lillard into that lineup with Harris beside him. Harris, a very good defensive player. You've got Wagner. You've got Banchero. I'm forgetting somebody off the top of my head. But, like, you've got some good...
Wendell Carter,
Yeah, Wendell Carter, right, who was a good rebounder. Yeah. Like you're definitely a playoff team with that group, and who knows in the next couple of if Lillard was a little bit younger, and I was Orlando, I would go all in on something like that. But because he's 33, I wouldn't do it. But it just goes to show how good I think Orlando can be. I just think they've got enormous potential to surprise me. They made a 12 win improvement last year. You know, they were a 22 win team the year before. They went to 34 this year. Could they get into the mid 40s this season? Yeah. I think they could. If they can stay healthy, that's a mid-40 win team.
I'm so curious to see how Jamal Mosley handles. They've got more guards than I've ever seen on any team's roster. Like I kept thinking, okay, they're going to make a deal here. They're going to do this. I think they've drafted four guards in the first round over the last 2 years. So it's just an interesting composition of guys. And then when you factor in that their two best players are not guards, but forwards that handle the ball a ton, it's like, man, everybody on your team can handle the ball, but also do you have to streamline that a little bit? But there's so much talent there. If you look back to not last year, but the year before, I don't know how they finished the season, but I know for at least half, if not two thirds of the season, their starting five had one of the best plus minuses in the league. And it was that their bench had like such a horrible net rating. But you could tell that the talent was there. Franz Wagner was so much better. I watched him a lot. He was a guy that went to Michigan, not at the same time I did, but like I did. You know, so I watched Michigan. It's pretty much the only college basketball I watch all the time, or the only team I watch consistently. And I never thought he would be as good as he was as a rookie. I didn't know that he would be that good 5 years down the line, let alone as a rookie. And then he continued to get better last year. They've got a lot of talent on that team. Gary Harris, it is really tempting to do that kind of small market, well, what are they going to do anyway sort of thing, where we just want to see these guys that are such good players go to a contender. But for all the guards they have on that team and for all the talent they have, it makes sense to have like a vet like him there to show these mm-hmm. guys the way and to be a contributing member of that team. So they're very interesting. And I think that absolutely they could sneak into that conversation as kind of a back end. I'd be a little surprised if they were to climb up to four, but that would be the equivalent of what Sacramento essentially did last year of just kind of surprising all of us. I'd love to see them make the playoffs this year. I think that they're really talented. And I think that they, once they get there, they should be there for a while because they've got so many young guys on this team.
My biggest concern is the learning curve. Well, it's health, first of all. They've got some guys that have been injured a mm-hmm. lot over the years. Fultz at the top of that list. Gary Harris has been in and out of the lineup. But if they're healthy, I think they're really good. I also think that there's going to be a learning curve for the rookies. Like, if they're going to try to incorporate, you know, Jet Howard, Anthony Black right away, it's more likely than not those guys aren't going to be ready to compete at that level. So I think sure. there's going to be a learning curve for those guys, but – man, like that. There's a lot of talent in Orlando. A lot of talent in mm-hmm. Orlando. So I'm going to join. I'm going to join our friend Kevin Clark and jumping on the Magic bandwagon for next.
It's like, what is? Does anyone care about Jonathan Isaac anymore? By the way, like
he Orlando was does. Really Orlando, good. I think will yeah. give. Orlando will give Jonathan Isaac multi-year contracts until he's 40. I'm convinced of that. Like they will squeeze. But... Man, they will. Will cross their fingers and hope that guy is the answer. Like when he plays, he's got obvious potential. He can defend. He's he's excellent. But man, they are not going out on Jonathan Isaac, not yet.
So there are a few things I wanted to sprinkle in here. Not quite similar to Philly, but I do think the vibe check in Milwaukee is going to be interesting at the start of training camp. I think Middleton was asked about Giannis's comments on the Reddick pod, but that's going to be a storyline in Milwaukee. You guys remember, obviously, Giannis signed that extension the year before they won the title, which kind of took away all the drama. He took the air out of the balloon in terms of his trade talk, his free agency talk. That's not the case this time. This time, he's the one reason there's going to be more pressure on this team. He's the guy kind of fueling the speculation, so that's going to be different. We saw Steve Kerr yesterday. We're recording this on a Tuesday. Steve Kerr say the Warriors have six starters, which is a very nice way to not have to say Chris Paul's coming off the bench yet. I think that's obviously going to be – I think every NBA person I know is in agreement that Paul needs to come off the bench except Chris Paul seemingly. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Warriors handle that early on. I wouldn't be surprised if he started for the first few games of the season before eventually moving to the bench.
I don't get that. I don't really. I mean, the Warriors have one of the greatest starting lineups of this generation, and it makes sense, from top to bottom. I mean, Clay and Steph have been together for a decade. Andrew Wiggins is one of the reasons, because of his defense, the Warriors won a championship in 2022. Draymond is Draymond. Kevon Looney is like the only big they have on the roster. You need someone out there rebounding. Yes. Now, I've heard arguments that like you can play a new death lineup. Well, the death lineup, even at its best, was used in microdoses. You didn't play the death lineup, for 12, 14 minutes at a time. You played the death lineup for like 3 or 4 minutes at a time. So, the idea that plugging Chris Paul in for one of those players makes basketball sense, that completely eludes me. And look, I understand, and I wrote about this on Tuesday as well, I understand that for Chris Paul, a first ballot Hall of Famer who is coming off a credible year as a starter in Phoenix, like the idea of going to the bench has got to be less than appealing. But if you're Chris Paul, it's also a chance to kind of reinvent yourself, to maybe get yourself to year 40 by being the sixth man of the year, which he could be. I mean, imagine Chris Paul kind of navigating an offense that's led by some of the younger guys, by Moses Moody, by Jonathan Kuminga. To me, that's a win-win for both sides if kind of egos can be taken out of the equation.
I agree.
Also,
and I think
a championship for the man.
Yeah.
I mean, like what helps you win this first championship? They lost their way last year. And let's be honest, a lot of that had to do with the fact that Wiggins missed a huge chunk of a critical part of the season where you're kind of gelling everything and getting ready for everything down the playoff run. But this is such a slam dunk if Chris Paul can just solidify a bench that was really bad for much of last season. You play a lot of minutes, and you'll probably get a lot of starts anyway, just with this group and how old they are. I don't know. Look, it's easier said than done. Like, if I had Chris Paul's resume, if I held the record for the most starts to begin a career in NBA history, I would be reluctant to be pulled out of that as well. But you have to realize what you're stepping into, which is a championship culture, frankly. A team that can win one, that's not in its prime anymore, but still has every ability to go out and win one, and that you get to solidify the weak part of that team and potentially win six man, which, what a cool story arc that would be, that when you can't start or when you're not starting, you get to do that instead for a championship team. So when you're like, can you imagine the just what that narrative sounds like for his career? It's a really nice way to kind of go out.
Nobody thought Chris Paul would be in the league right now. Like, you know, most people thought after Houston ended, he would have kind of disappeared the way of Carmelo Anthony. He played great in Oklahoma City, great in Phoenix. Like, this is, you know, he's playing with house money right now. And to get one more contract that's going to, that could be, you know, today's NBA marketplace, $15, $20 million per year over a couple of years, I think a reserve role is where it's at. Also, with Golden State, do we have to address the idea that after dealing with LaFaire, Jordan Poole, the Warriors went out and signed a guy that Klay Thompson and Draymond Green said sucked at one point, Rodney Magruder.
It's tough.
I'm sure, like, you know, what's water under the bridge for these guys. I have no doubt that it's not going to be a lingering issue. But I thought that was hilarious. Like, Klay Thompson legitimately, you know, said he was awful, and Draymond Green said it was similar.
He hit him with the Snoop Dogg, like, Charlemagne clip where he's like, who? That was how they felt about Rodney Magruder. I'm sure they've not thought about Rodney Magruder since that night. And the last storyline I want to throw out there, by the way, real quick, is I want to see how Michael Malone motivates his guys in Denver, because he's not going to be able to play the nobody believes in his card anymore. There's never been more wide support of Nikola Jokic as the best player in the NBA. I don't think he can fall back on the nobody pays attention to us, nobody thinks we can win routine. Which, by the way, I just want to point out that I saw Michael Malone in Los Angeles in the middle of the last season, shook his hand in the tunnel, told him the Nuggets were my finals pick. He just completely ignored that the entire postseason run, as he talked about how nobody wanted to pick
you
this
wanted
team
him to shout you out.
And then I saw him. I was leaving Eric Spoelstra's press conference in Miami and bumped into Michael Malone again. And I said, Coach, what did I tell you? You guys are my finals pick. Don't make me look like an idiot. So he's conveniently left that part out of the narrative. So I'm just curious to see how Coach Malone handles it this year.
I don't think it's going to be
hilarious, man.
I don't think it's going to be any kind of issue there. I mean, look, Mike is still going to play the nobody believes in this card. Like, the first comment that somebody makes about the Nuggets that is even remotely negative will be tacked to the bulletin board in that Denver locker room. Metaphor.
Chris, they're going to use you. They're going to use you as the bulletin board material. Let's keep it funky here.
Yeah. I'm sure whenever I open my mouth about Denver, they'll do that. But, I mean, look, like, you think Nikola Jokic, like, ever thought about anything anybody said? Like,
no way.
He was never motivated by any of that. I think organically Jamal Murray is going to be better. You know, he's now another year removed from that ACL injury, and I think the player we saw in the second half in the playoffs is going to be the player and more we see next year. I think Michael Porter Jr., if he stays healthy, he's going to be really good. I'm not overly concerned about the loss of Bruce Brown, because I think Christian Brown can step in and give them, you know, good minutes. Jeff Green loss is tough too, but and they've got pieces there. Like, I think they're fine. It's going to chug along, mostly because their superstar does not give a fuck. Like, just does not care. He's just going to do his thing and be great, and the rest of the team will kind of fall in line behind him. Like, they to me are, you know, prohibitive favorite to at least win the regular season crown, at least be the number one seed in the Western Conference. Playoffs come around, and, like, Phoenix comes together, the Clippers fully healthy. That might be a different argument. You know, when those teams, if they're fully loaded and looking like they're playing, you know, with good chemistry, they're going to be tough to beat. But for the regular season, it's Denver's, you know, number one seed to lose.
I'll just say about Denver, I'm mostly in agreement with you. I think Jokic, like you said, there's no shaking him. There's no rattling him. He just produces. I'm interested to see how the bench shakes out over the course of the season. Jeff Green was really important for the small ball lineups they played in the playoffs in particular. And there's a long way between now and then. But how they kind of address that situation, they looked their best when they basically stopped playing a backup center and went with that Gordon Green front court down the stretch and in the playoffs. How do they find a way to do that again? Is Peyton Watson ready to step up? I know there's players around the league who are really high on him, but we obviously didn't get to see him play very much last year. They had an injury kind of in the offseason, Vlado Kanchar tearing his ACL in FIBA ball. You know, Zeke Nagy ready to step up. I'm interested to see how they figure out the bench, but they will have time to go out and find upgrades, certainly between now and the start of the playoffs. All right, guys, that will do it for today's episode. We will be back next week.
How do we do an episode where you don't like mention, like, I figured like some kind of Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce reference would come out of your mouth. Like, I was convinced that. I was sure of it.
How do I want to say this? Nope, not for me.
What's the
jersey
what's the
sales
NBA,
were up 400% since the game? Yeah, that's so interesting. What, though.
What's the NBA equivalent of Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift? Do we have one? I've got one for you.
Okay, I really want to hear it. You have to look at
so Travis Kelce is the second best player on arguably the best team in the NFL. So you use that as context for the NBA.
Okay.
So the best team in the NBA is Denver. The second best player, Jamal Murray, right? So Jamal Murray, and now what like pop star could you attach to Jamal Murray? I would say Jamal Murray and Lady Gaga. That's the NBA equivalent of Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift.
I like
no
the
takers?
Logic
no?
and
okay,
the reasoning.
Fine.
No. Damn. I would just say the problem is I see what you're saying in terms of Jamal Murray and the Travis Kelce comp, but I almost think the Nuggets are not famous enough not to rub it back into Michael Malone's face. So I think you need a team like I think the Chiefs, because of Mahomes, have a similar national profile to a team like the Lakers at this point.
Maybe like every NFL team does. Like every NFL team, but like Jacksonville has that profile.
True. So I think it might be Anthony Davis and Lady Gaga, even though Anthony Davis is a happily married man. I think it might be I mean, NBA does have Rich Paul and Adele.
That's what I was about to say, is like that's probably the biggest pop star that's been associated with the NBA, even though it's not a player, if you make make sense of it. If we're not talking about like Ben Simmons and Kylie and
I was gonna say know, the Jenners, stuff like do the that. Jenners count as pop stars?
Because I mean, those are pop stars, but they're not like celebrities because of their singing or anything like that. But it's still you will definitely take note of the fact that all of a sudden my fiance, who does not give a damn about basketball, knows who certain people are because of those attachments and those connections. So it matters to some people, certainly.
All right. Well, now we have a homework assignment for the next episode, apparently. We will be back next week or maybe even earlier if Damian Lillard gets traded. So stay tuned to the crossover.